You're listening to Voices of Your Village. This is episode 180. In this episode, I'm diving into how to build emotional intelligence in infants and toddlers. So often we get questions about, what if they're not verbal yet, or they can't tell me how they're feeling yet? How does this look to start with our younger kiddos? This episode is for you if those are questions that you have. When we researched the SEP method, we researched it with kiddos birth to five, and I was teaching infant toddler at the time. My kiddos were primarily toddlers, 1 to 2, and I have been doing this work with kiddos from the get-go, from birth through toddlerhood into preschool years. For a long time, it's absolutely something we can do with our younger kiddos. And these foundations, when we lay them earlier, are game changers for down the road, for our preschoolers, for kiddos when they have words to be able to utilize language around how they're feeling and build their feelings vocabulary. I'm so excited for you to build these foundations with the infants and toddlers. So let's dive in. Welcome to Voices of Your Village, a place where parents, caregivers, teachers, and experts come to support one another on this wild ride of raising tiny humans. We combine decades of experience with the latest research to create the modern parenting village. Let's dive into honest conversation about real parenting challenges so it doesn't have to be this hard. I'm your host, Alyssa Blass Campbell. All right, guys, so often when we're talking about emotion coaching and how to build emotional intelligence in our kiddos, we're talking about kiddos who have verbal language, who are far enough along in their development that their receptive language is pretty advanced and that they're at a place where they can understand everything that we're saying to them, or at least most of it, and perhaps be able to express their needs or their feelings or their desires and communicate with us with verbal language. However, we've been getting a whole bunch of questions about what this looks like for infants and young toddlers. Can we even do this work? Does it not start until later? All that jazz. So this episode, we're going to dive in. We're going to dive into how to do this work with kiddos fresh out the womb. My research of the SEP method, the Collaborative Emotion Processing Method, which if you're new here, I co-created the SEP method and we researched it across the US and just wrote a book on it that we're shopping to publishers now. But when we researched it with kids as young as 4 months. And my hub for this work is an infant toddler. You may have heard me say it, but 12 to 24 months is, I think, the hardest age and also my favorite age. It's my favorite age to do this work. You can see so much growth and development, and it can make such a difference in who the child is as a 2, 3, 4, 5-year-old and beyond when we lay this foundation for them, birth to two. So let's dive into what this looks like. First of all, the biggest component here is us. The most important thing you can work on in infant toddler is pausing and breathing so that you can respond with intention rather than reacting. This is so hard in infant toddler because often they're crying. They're crying because they don't have the words to communicate otherwise. They're crying because they are trying to learn how to walk and they fell down. They're crying because they're hungry. They're crying because they're tired. They're crying because they want to get up. They're crying because you walked away. They're crying. And so often it's hard for us to regulate our cortisol response because your body is designed to mirror that emotion. They spike cortisol, right? They have cortisol running through their body when they're having a hard feeling. And so you automatically, your body spikes the cortisol. We're designed to mirror it. It's called mirror neurons. The key here is that it's not their job to calm down so that you can calm down. It's your job to regulate your emotional response so that you can show up and respond with intention. So that when they fall down as they're trying to stand up or take those first steps, that you can respond and be like, oh, that's so frustrating. You're working so hard to walk and you fell down again. Man, that's hard. And then if they need a snuggle, you can offer it. Would you like a snuggle before you try again? But when you can respond with intention there, when you can show them, A, this isn't an emergency. I want them to know the difference in the tone of your voice between they fell down because they're trying to walk and they're running into the street. That those are two very different things. And they should get very different responses. When they're running into the street, I'm not responding with intention. I'm reacting. My tone is going to be different. My reaction is going to be different. They might sense my fear and then also feel fear. And to be honest, that's what I want. I want them to feel fear if they're going to walk into the street. I don't want them to feel fear when they're learning where their body is in space and they're stuck under that tiny human table and they're trying to get out and they keep bumping into the leg of the table as they're trying to figure out how their body fits through that space and they're getting frustrated, then I want to be able to respond with intention. Oh man, you got stuck under the table. Ugh, that's a small hole. How are you going to get out of there? And then holding that space and not just going over and taking away the obstacle. So often in infant toddler, we can solve the problem for them. We're going to go back to the basics here. We know that the first phase of emotion processing is allowing them to feel. And so we have to hold that space where they get to feel frustrated, where they get to feel annoyed, where they get to feel mad or disappointed. Ugh, you're so disappointed you wanted me to hold you and I have to set you down so that I can wash my hands. Man, it's hard to wait. Holding that space and validating their emotion lets them know it's okay for them to feel. It starts to teach them what they are feeling when we start to put labels to those emotions. They learn, oh, I won't feel this way forever. And we can start to build some coping tools. So in infancy, we're largely still looking at coping mechanisms here because kids are really co-regulating with us. They're going to fire off of our regulation, which is why it's so important for adults to have support and a toolbox to self-regulate.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory, two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And now we're back with a whole new podcast about unsticking it, launching in January. What happens when life gets in the way of our creativity instead of nourishing it?
We talk to all sorts of guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
So, join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom.
Get out of there, life gunk.
Let us help you get back to your best creative self. Look for Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
Wherever you listen to podcasts, starting in January.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. Because sometimes life sucks.
Unsticking It. Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
If every single time your child cries, you feel a rush of anxiety that won't go away until that child stops crying, then what's happening is it's becoming their job to regulate you. I know that's hard news to hear. There are tools. We have tools to support you. We dive into this in depth at Mama's Getaway Weekend. We have Tiny Humans, Big Emotions membership. We have more podcast episodes here. We have tons of tools to support you. But largely in infancy, the focus is you learning to regulate your physiological response to their cry. Because you're designed to react. It is your job to keep this human alive. And so when they cry, your body's like, oh, yikes, what do I need to fix? Are they hungry? Are they tired? Do they need a diaper change? Are they sick? Like, it's your job to fix those things and to keep them alive. So of course you have that reaction. But in order to hold space for and respond with intention to their emotions, we need to work on regulating emotional reactions within ourselves. This all starts with awareness. It starts with being mindful of like, ooh, that's where I feel it. For me personally, when I'm feeling fear, what we often call anxiety, I feel it first in my chest, and then it will radiate through my body. It'll go up through my neck will get tight, and I will just like clench, and then it goes down through my legs and my body. I can like feel it radiate. And everything inside of me is like, make this stop. Just make it stop. And I've had to learn to be like, oh, I know that sensation. I'm feeling afraid. And then pause. For me, breathing is huge. Closing my eyes and just breathing. And I will use a mantra usually when I'm breathing. Sometimes it's as simple as like breathing in calm, breathing out fear. Breathing in calm, breathing out fear. And then I can look over and be like, oh, you were working so hard at that. Or you're getting so hungry. Are you ready for a bottle? Let's go heat it up. Or man, you're so hungry and this letdown is not happening fast enough. It really stinks when you're hungry and you have to work for it. But when you can let their body know this isn't an emergency, that's a huge step in building their emotional development foundation. So, through infancy, that's what we're focused on. We're focused on our own self-awareness and then starting to cultivate theirs. Identifying for them what they are feeling or what you're seeing. Oh, I see that your fists are so tight and you're hitting them on the ground. You're trying so hard to reach that toy and you can't get it when you're sitting up. Oh, that's so frustrating when your body won't move and you really want it to go. Or the kid who's trying to crawl forward, but they keep pushing backwards and they're getting further away from their goal. Just validating that frustration. Man, you're going backwards. Ugh, you really want to get that toy and every time you move, your body goes backwards farther away from it. What could we do? Would you like me to help you? And helping you might be putting your hand behind their feet so they push off of your hand to go forward. Rather than pushing themselves back, they have a baseline to push off of. Sometimes it might be slowly moving that toy toward them, depending on their level of dysregulation and what you're working on with gross motor. But here we're starting to build this awareness of what they're feeling, that it's okay to feel, and that it won't feel this way forever, that there are tools to help them move through it. The cozier you get with your emotions, the easier it is to support them through theirs. During infancy, for coping, you also might be using tools like a pacifier or a lovey mechanisms to help them soothe. That's okay. We will start to move away from mechanisms into strategies between 1 and 2. Cognitively, it's really hard for a kid to tap into strategies to calm when they are infants. So fear not, that's fine. The only thing with a pacifier that I want to note here, past the newborn stage, really past 6 months, once a kid is regulated, like say you use it as a coping mechanism, and then they find their calm, and then they're crawling and they're back off to play. Then I want to take the pacifier so that they can work on other forms of play. Like, they will put things in their mouth. That's a huge part of sensory play. They will start to babble and coo and talk to you. And they can't do that with a pacifier in their mouth. And it's a huge part of communication. So I want to be mindful of that here, is that if we are using a pacifier past 6 months, that it's not something they're walking around with or crawling around with just in their mouth, just because, but that it's something that we use with intention. Also, when you close your mouth, your tongue rests on the back of your teeth and it helps regulate your central nervous system. When a pacifier is in your mouth, you can't do that. So it can also be dysregulating for them if they are keeping that pacifier in their mouth consistently. When we're moving into our one-year-old, this is where language development is huge. And if we are slowing down and are communicating with them, we will see a huge spike in their language development. Here's a caveat. If they have gross motor delays, if they have any sensory integration or sensory processing challenges, they will likely have a language delay. If those aren't on the table, if they're typically developing, there aren't any sensory challenges, and language is developing on target and typically, we will see a huge burst, multiple huge bursts actually, between 12 and 24 months. It's also a fantastic time to be working on emotional development language because they can start to communicate with you. A little girl that I had starting at 9 months old, I had her until she was about 2.5. Right around 2 years old, I had told her, I had validated her feeling and said that she seemed really sad. And she was like, "I'm not sad, I'm mad." And that was at 2 years old. She could give me that sentence and she was aware of what she was feeling because we'd been doing this for over a year. And so as you introduce this language and as you consistently are supporting them with an emotional vocabulary and library, they will start to use it. You can also check out episode 10 with a speech language pathologist, Sarah Friel. Also, she has a British accent, so it's like a lovely episode to listen to. But she gives lots of tips and tricks to help support language development and to how to communicate with kiddos starting in infancy, but also through early toddlerhood and beyond, that can help them build their communication patterns. I would absolutely, if you are in the infant toddler world, like, please go listen to that episode next, episode 10. There's also on the blog post for that episode, so if you go to our website and you even just search like Sarah Friel or language development, whatever, it'll pull up the blog post for episode 10. And she created a language development freebie guide for you guys that's there too. So you can snag that bad boy. But as you're working on language development here, give them credit. These tiny humans understand so much more than we give them credit for. I want to be talking to them all the time. Not to the point of overloading them, but I'm going to narrate my day. I'm going to let them know what's coming next. I'm going to, when they start crying and throwing their milk cup, I'm going to say, "Ugh, it looks like your milk is all gone. Oh man, instead of throwing your milk or instead of throwing your cup, you can say more milk." And I will use sign language or gestures for more milk, letting them know what they can say instead. So here I'm continuing to build their awareness of you're frustrated. That's why you're doing that. Instead of throwing this, here's what you could do. So sometimes when we're in this infant toddler stage, what appears as a behavior or emotional expression is really this inability to communicate what they want to communicate with verbal language. And so as we support them with that, and man, I would start using sign language quite young, like in early infancy, to start to build, they will develop their fine motor skills, their ability to sign or use gestures before their verbal language. So using that consistently can be huge. I have had kiddos signing back to me at 9 months old because we've consistently used signs. It can happen quite young. When they are having those like huge tantrums because they're not going to get what they want, also welcome to the rest of life. In these instances, we are going to follow the five phases of emotion processing just like we would for older kids. Except in phase two, instead of asking them how they're feeling, we're going to connect and empathize again over what they're feeling. So say they really wanted to try and scoop something themselves and you did it for them. Oh, man, I didn't realize you wanted to do it yourself and I did it for you. It's so frustrating when you were expecting to do it by yourself and I did it. Just connect with them. Let them know you totally get where they're coming from. And then here's the kicker, guys. This is where your life will be a game changer. So will theirs as a 2-, 3-, 4-year-old, 5-year-old and beyond.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter-Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests, too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
This is the same also if you're just starting this work and you're just like, hey, I'll tune in to see what she says, but your kiddo is older. This answer is the same for older kiddos too. While they are whining or crying, it's not a time for talking about the problem. So if they come up to you and they're using like a whiny voice, they're not ready to talk about the problem. Ugh, you can validate still and then, ugh, man, I can't understand your words with that voice. How can I help you feel calm so that we can solve this together? Would you like a hug so that we could figure this out together? Would you like to do 5 big jumps before we figure this out together? I'm going to give them 2 options. Would you like a hug? Would you like 5 big jumps? Would you, if you have the time and space, would you like to read a book? Would you like some space? Would you like to dance? Would you like some squeezes, which might be like some deep tissue, like muscle work where you're going to like squeeze their legs or their arms? We're giving them sensory input here that helps regulate their central nervous system and process that cortisol so that they're ready to problem solve. If we offer up something like a screen, or a snack when they're not actually hungry, then we're not giving their body the tools that it needs to process that cortisol. Instead, we're temporarily numbing it, but the cortisol still exists and the unprocessed emotion just lives beneath the surface, ready to explode again. So the key here is that we are offering coping tools, 2 options. If they don't come in for the hug, then I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to give you some space. If you need my help to feel calm, I will be in the living room, in the kitchen, in my bedroom. I'm happy to help you feel calm when you're ready. Guys, I did this work with kiddos who were 1 year old, 12 to 24 months. I know how hard it is to walk away from the child who is having a tantrum because we can fix it. I almost always know exactly what they want or need, and I could fix it. I could make the whining stop. I could make the crying stop. But then guess what happens? Every time they have a hard emotion, you validate and you're like, why do they keep whining? I can't stand this whining voice. Because that's how they think this works. They think, oh, I whine or cry to this human, and then they solve this problem for me. And we have to build a different pattern or routine for them. Different habits. So that when they whine or cry, we validate and then we offer a coping strategy to help them feel calm. And then once they're calm, then we can solve the problem. So once they're calm and regulated, then I'm going to say, man, you were working so hard to build that tower and it crashed. Would you like to try again? Now we can move forward and problem solve. I was teaching in a classroom with young toddlers, and this little girl was building with MagnaTiles, and she was about 20 months, and her MagnaTile tower crashed. Somebody bumped into the table she was building on, and it crashed. And I got down on at her level to emotion coach her, and she turned, and she slapped me across the face. And the only kind thing I could say in that moment was, I'm going to go to the bathroom. It was my job in that moment to respond with intention, and I wasn't regulated enough to do so. She knows she's not supposed to hit me. She knows that it hurts me. It's not her first choice. In fact, I know her heart does not want to hurt me. I know that in her dream world, when she feels frustrated or disappointed, she's able to find her calm and not hurt somebody around her. Just like you as an adult, when you yell or you scream or you make a mistake, or you react instead of respond, you usually feel like garbage afterwards. We usually call it guilt, but you have a hard feeling afterwards. It's like, oh, I didn't handle that the way I wanted to. Kids feel that same thing. When they turn and they hit you, it's not their first choice. But in that moment, I'm like, what? I just got slapped across the face. And so I go to the bathroom. I have mantras on my phone. I look at, I find my calm. I know when I go back in that room, she might want a hug to feel calm. And it's real hard to hug someone who just slapped you across the face. So I have to be calm enough and ready to emotion coach her and potentially provide a hug. Needless to say, I go back. Once I'm calm and ready, I emotion coach her. She did want a hug. Once she's calm, and you can feel it in your arms when they like release, and it's like, oh. And I was like, oh, babe, I'm so sorry that happened. Would you like help rebuilding your tower? Or I might ask, are you ready to try again? Now we're problem solving, but not in the moment. It's also not a time for law enforcement or delivery of justice. Later, way later, I might say something along the lines of, man, when you're feeling frustrated, when your MagnaTile tower crashes and you're so disappointed about it, instead of hitting me, you could stomp your feet. You could jump up and down. I'm now giving her things that she can do instead of hitting me, but not in the moment. We're talking about that jazz later. Anytime we're seeing a behavior, I know we have this desire to like not condone the behaviors. And so we want to make sure that we shut down the behavior. But really what's going on beneath the surface is an emotional need and then an unmet need at the core. And if we can respond to the emotions beneath the surface, you'll stop seeing those behaviors. When kiddos can learn what to do with frustration or disappointment, heck, when we as adults can learn what to do with it? What's your reaction when somebody cuts you off? What's your reaction when your partner says something sassy or snippy to you because they're annoyed? What's your reaction when somebody does something that isn't what you want? What's your reaction when you expected something and something else happens? We can't expect more from these tiny humans than we have ourselves. Our goal here is to start to build our own awareness so we can respond with intention. and help them build their awareness so that they have the choice of how to respond. If they aren't aware of what they're feeling and how it feels in their body, they can't pause and choose to stomp their feet instead of hitting you. They will react instead of responding with intention. And as you do this work, you'll notice how stinking hard it is to build in that response time. It takes awareness first, and it won't be perfect. They're practicing and learning this. So all throughout the day, they're going to make mistakes. And we get to support them through it and look at it and say, like, man, what are they still working on? What can I still help them with? What are they communicating with me about what they still need support in? Maybe they really struggle with what to do when they're feeling scared. Great. We can start to talk about what helps you feel calm when you're feeling scared. And a lot of the times here, I'm not expecting a verbal response from them. I'm going to ask that question, and then I'm going to say, sometimes when I'm feeling scared, I like to blank, and I'm giving them suggestions here. The biggest thing we can do, guys, is to model and to talk to them, to give them the benefit of the doubt of understanding this jazz. Someone reached out recently that their kiddo kept having these tantrums in the grocery store. And I was like, okay, let's pre-teach. When you're going in, let them know, when we get into the grocery store, we are going to get in the cart and you can hold my list. We have to go get things for dinner. And then we're talking to them throughout the trip, like, oh, what's next on the list? Let's take a look. Looks like we need bananas. Let's go find some bananas. We find the bananas. We put them in. Yay, we found the bananas. What's next on the list? Oh, man, we have to find some milk. Can you help me find the milk? I'm talking to them. We're narrating what we're doing so that they feel included. They feel part of the process. They know what's going on. And she was like, oh, do you think they'll understand that? They're only 14 months. They're not going to understand every single word you say, but they're definitely going to start to build their language development as we're saying these things. And then they connect, oh, these are bananas. This is milk. This is what we're doing next. I feel a part of the process. So often we just go through the days and go through transitions without talking to them, without letting them know what's coming up and what we're doing and what's coming next. And when we can give them that heads up, even if they don't have the expressive language yet to respond to us with a sentence or even a word, they understand so much more of what we're saying than we usually give them credit for. And then they will start to, one word at a time, produce that language. They will start to, all of a sudden you'll say, where are the bananas? And they'll say, banana. And you'll be like, what the crap? It will start to happen, but only if we are initiating that and bringing them into the fold here. All right. So you're going to go tune into episode 10. And we have an episode coming up for you about the phrase, use your words, and when kids can access what language, because we don't all have access to all of our language all the time. So I think that one will be helpful too. And then we also have episode 63 on emotion coaching for emotion processing. Go check that out. I talk a lot about what this looks like in infant toddler. And Lauren, the co-creator of the SET method, talks a lot about what this looks like for preschool pre-K. So you'll hear examples for both in there. All right, babe, you've got this. Thank you so stinking much for parenting with intention, for showing up and building an emotional development toolbox with and for your tiny humans. That's how we're going to change this world together. Do me a favor and screenshot you tuning into this. Share it over on Instagram. Tag seed.and.sew, S-E-W. I would love to come give you a virtual hug and see where you're tuning in from. I want to DM with you and hear what your favorite takeaways were and what are some things you still have questions about. You are not alone in this journey. All right, babe. See you over on the gram.
Thanks for tuning in to Voices of Your Village. Check out the transcript at voicesofyourvillage.com. Did you know that we have a special community over on Instagram hanging out every day with more free content? Come join us at seed.and.sew, S-E-W. Take a screenshot of you tuning in, share it on the gram, and tag seed.and.sew to let me know your key takeaway. If you're digging this podcast, make sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We love collaborating with you to raise emotionally intelligent humans.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.